Good afternoon. This is Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Lake Effect producer and co-host Bonnie North is away from the station for a few weeks, but she is at work. Bonnie's part of a journalism fellowship through the RIAS Berlin Commission that takes her to several countries in Europe.
She recently visited NATO's headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, for a briefing on the organization's history and current efforts underway in the global landscape.
Piers Cazalet is the head of press and media and deputy spokesperson at NATO, and he explains to Bonnie why something that started at the beginning of the Cold War is still important to the United States, Canada, and other non-EU nations.
It's a long and complicated history. Back since 1949, the world has changed a lot, and NATO has changed a lot as well. But it's still as relevant today as it ever was. But it's changed because now we face different sorts of challenges from the challenges we faced back at the beginning of the Cold War in 1949. I think that the key thing, though, for the US is the importance of NATO lies in three main elements I would highlight. The first is the need for stability and security in Europe, which is of great benefit to the US. We're a huge trading partner with the US. We have huge exchanges of people, of information, of culture, and all of this, it's critical for the US as it is critical for Europe as well. So America has a great interest in having a stable and prosperous and secure Europe as a trading partner and just a social partner. Secondly, we're a community of values. So we share the same, our societies share the same fundamental values. And it's through organizations like NATO that these values can be enhanced and enriched and really embedded for now and in the future in our societies. And the third reason is that the European continent is actually, it's a stepping stone for the US into other parts of the world. We have about 28 US bases here in Europe. And these are not just where American troops are here for the defense of Europe. They also enable the US to project power and project influence into other parts of the world, in particular the Middle East and Africa. The most notable base we have in this sense is AFRICOM, so the command for the American Command for Africa, which is based in Stuttgart, Germany.
There's also a lot has been movement recently in NATO to go into the Baltic states, and that seems to be a relatively new focus for the alliance. Is that true?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, NATO started a process of enlargement to the east in 1999, and this has continued over the last almost 30 years. The Baltic states joined in the 2000s. And we had a very good level of cooperation with them before they joined, and afterwards they participated in various missions, including, for example, the mission in Afghanistan. But one of the key components of NATO is what we call collective defense. So the notion that if one ally is attacked or is under threat, then all the other allies will come to its aid. In 2014, when Russia invaded Crimea, there was an increase in rhetoric as well from Russia against the Baltic states in particular and some of the other former Warsaw Pact states. So there was a vulnerability that was exposed then. This was the time when NATO took the decision that it had to deploy some troops as a deterrent measure into the Baltic states. So this was the first time we'd done this as a stationing of troops in the Baltic states. Previously, there had been exercises where troops come in and out. But now we have what we call forward presence. And it's about 5,000 troops altogether. This is American troops, it's Canadian troops, it's British troops, it's German troops, and troops from other members of the alliance as well. It's a very important presence. It gives reassurance to the Baltic populations, and it also gives a deterrent message to Russia.
You had mentioned that this had not happened after essentially the fall of the Soviet Union. Was that because you did not want, or NATO did not want to antagonize Russia? What became Russia?
Well, it's really a question of threat, and there was no perception of any threat up until then. There were sometimes political issues and political problems between NATO allies and Russia, but these were resolved in a political way. But everything changed really with the Russian invasion of Crimea and their continued destabilization of eastern Ukraine. And as I said, at the time, they were also sending some very strong rhetorical signals to some of the Baltic states that were quite threatening. And so then it was decided that a military response was needed to try to provide the deterrence to make sure that Russia didn't do anything with the Baltic states.
You mentioned that, you know, allies decided. And one of the things that was so key in our briefings today was the understanding that NATO is its members, that it doesn't act on its own. It acts in what the members just choose to do. How do you work with other channels of, say, diplomacy or state chat, you know, where say, Germany might want to do something for its own defense? I'm assuming NATO doesn't interfere with those things, but how do you coordinate a response to something, say, like Crimea? Do you also work with diplomacy, with diplomats, with other agencies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, NATO is it's a political military organization. So we have, you will have seen in the corridors here, people in suits, but also people in uniforms. We have a mixture of people from diplomatic backgrounds and military backgrounds. And this is a recognition that there are international problems that can be addressed and solved through dialogue, as well as through the assistance of the military. So we're not a military organization. It's political and military. That's the important first point. Secondly, as you pointed out, everything here is decided by consensus. So we need 29 nations around the table to agree on a course of action before we can actually take that course of action, which means that we have a lot of diplomacy and negotiation around every major step that we as an organization want to take. All the allies have to be brought on board, and this means that we have, it's a very strong organization. When decisions are taken, everybody agrees with them, and so we can move forward. That said, there is nothing to stop individual nations taking actions for their own defense or their own security. Nations have not given up sovereignty in any sense over their own defense or security. Different countries will pursue different priorities, which may not be a priority for NATO, but that may be a priority for that particular country. In the US's case, for example, one of your biggest troop deployments overseas is in the Korean Peninsula. This has got nothing to do with NATO. It's a US calculation about its global interests and its global security and partnerships in another part of the globe. And it goes and does these deployments without any reference to NATO, and nobody in NATO has to agree it at all. In the same way, individual European nations can decide, for example, France has deployments in Central Africa. And it does those deployments. I mean, it can discuss them with NATO allies, but basically it can decide what it wants to do, and nobody in NATO is going to stop them.
But are there certain expectations, being a member of the organization, are there certain things expected of each member?
There are two big expectations, really. The first is allies have to provide for their own defense. And this is one of the key articles of the Washington Treaty, which was signed in 1949, which set up NATO. So they have to be strong enough to provide for their own defense and provide the right troops and the right capabilities for their own defense. So it's not a club for free riders where you sign up and then say, I'm not going to do any more defense because everyone will come to my aid if I'm attacked. You have to provide for your own defense. So this is the first point. And it's an important point, and it's important at the moment in Europe in terms of how much money we're spending on defense and what level of troops and equipment we have for European defense. But the second point is the issue of collective defense. And here there is an obligation in terms of the treaty, the Washington Treaty, where, as I mentioned before, if one country comes under attack, then the other allies agree under Article 5 of the treaty that they will provide support, political and military support, to the country that's coming under attack. In fact, in the history of NATO, that article has only ever been invoked once, which was after the attacks in the US on 9/11 in 2001. And this resulted in the NATO mission in Afghanistan.
The mission of NATO was to provide a common defense for what was then the Soviet bloc and the Soviet Union. Has that changed since basically the dissolution of the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union in 1989, 1991 in there? Has that shifted? Has NATO found, I mean, it's still a common defense, but what are you defending against? Is it still the same thing?
Well, now, yes, from the 1940s to the 1980s, yes, NATO's approach and NATO's posture was fairly monolithic, and it was about a response to the Soviet Union and protecting, in particular, the European continent from Soviet attack. Since the end of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, the end of the Soviet Union, the security threats have changed, and NATO has changed with that. We've had instability in the continent, the Balkan Wars of the 1990s, and NATO played a role there in terms of trying to end those wars and stabilize the region after those wars. So we've had a kind of peacekeeping, peacemaking role. With Russia, the relationship has its ups and downs. Up until about 2014, the relationship had been difficult at political levels, but that was it. But 2014 marked a step change in terms of Russian policy and effectively the tearing up of the rules of security architecture of Europe. And so NATO had to adapt and change to be able to confront that new threat. At the same time, Europe also faces a threat from what we call the South, so North Africa and the Middle East in particular, and instability in those countries, which can play into Europe in terms of terrorism and migration and problems which then present themselves to European countries. So NATO has had to address those threats as well. So we've had to stay nimble and agile as an organization to be able to respond to all the threats that are coming up and to be able to really tackle everything as best we can.
What do you think the greatest misconception is about NATO across the pond in the United States? What do you, when you do these briefings for people, what do you hear the most that you have to correct?
I think, to be honest, both in the US and in Europe, that now there are a lot of people who don't even know what NATO is. So there's a lot of there's a big lack of knowledge about NATO altogether, and I encounter that as much in Europe as I do in the US. 30, 40 years ago, yeah, everybody knew what NATO was. It was really, it was in our backyards all the time. So now we find we have to explain generally what is NATO's purpose and what NATO does. I think in the US, there's been increasing debate about the role of NATO over the last couple of years in the US. The important thing, I think, for U.S. audiences to understand is that it's an organization of 29 countries, with the U.S. working alongside its European allies and Canada. These European allies and Canada have provided a huge amount of support to the U.S. And, for example, in Afghanistan, we've had hundreds of thousands of European and Canadian troops fighting alongside U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And more than 1,000 of those European and Canadian troops have paid the ultimate price. They've lost their lives. So it's a two-way street that we've long had. Europe is better with NATO and with the US presence in Europe. But the US is better with NATO and with its European allies.
Piers, I want to thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That was Like Facts' Bonnie Knorr speaking with Piers Cazalet, Head of Press and Media and Deputy Spokesperson at the NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. You can find more coverage of Bonnie's fellowship abroad and a link to the blog she's writing on location at wuwm.com.